Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
The Steve Austin Show is brought to you free today by our friends at BetOnline. Get in the mix at betonline.ag and use the promo code PODCAST1 for your 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts and exclusive partner of Podcast One Sportsnet.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, I'm sitting down here at the Broken Skull Ranch down here in South Texas, talking to a man coming from, where are you at, Mick, Long Island?
Yeah, back home in Long Island.
Now, what's the correct way to say it? Because when I talk to Taz, he says he's on Long Island. Are you in Long Island or on Long Island?
I make it a point to say I'm on Long Island. I think either one works, but I'm pretty specific about you're on the island, not in.
fair enough. Hey, man, anyway, I'm talking to my good buddy, Mick Foley, my former travel partner, one of my arch rivals back in the day, my former tag team partner, former travel partner, my partner in crime way back in the early 90s when we were both trying to crack our good friend Diamond Dallas Page on the road by ribbing him unmercifully. So anyway, I reached out to Mick because I was on his Twitter account, The Real Mick Foley. And that led me to his Facebook account, and Mick had made a very impassioned plea about all things that were going on in WWE and all things that are not going on in WWE. And so I decided to reach out to him and have a discussion about the current state of affairs. And one of the things that me and Mick talked about before I started rolling sound was neither one of us want to come across as two bitter veterans who are griping about every single thing or complaining. But I really enjoyed your post, and Mick is still a big part of the company. Went into the WWE Hall of Fame in 2013. Absolutely, I don't think you're going to find a bigger fan of professional wrestling on planet Earth than Mick Foley. But nonetheless, tell me about this article that you penned, and I think you penned it about 4:30 in the morning, according to your Facebook page.
it's kind of like a second part to something I did last week after Raw. You have to sometimes fight the tendency to put something out on social media immediately because it's a great tool for getting the word out. But sometimes there's some knee jerk reactions and some complaining that really should have been thought through. So I kind of fought that last Monday, but I was bothered all day Tuesday, and I realized this was going back last Tuesday, and I realized I'm on the verge of not watching this show. And I made a decision back when I was with TNA in 2000 that I could choose to be bitter and not watch the show on principle, or I could join my kids for 3 hours, for that 3 hours a week. They love the show. And I went in and I started watching it. And I could really, after having been gone, I could really appreciate everything they did right, all the camera shots they got, and even if I thought storylines could be redundant, I really came to appreciate the time I was spending with the kids. And it's kind of been a no-brainer that if it's Monday night and I'm home, that's where I'll be for 3 hours every Monday night. But my 12-year-old falls asleep about 9. My 14-year-old has lost interest. And, I've got a really close relationship with my daughter. We do all kinds of things. And I'm home more than I was. I don't necessarily, need to watch the show just for the sake of watching the show. And I realized, man, this show is, it's not depressing me. It's frustrating me. And when I realized that I was on the verge of not watching, I just thought that I could be, indicative of what could be hundreds of thousands of other people who were on the fence, who hadn't been happy about the show for a while, but were watching it because that was their pattern and that's what they did. And so I texted Chris Nowinski, and I said, Chris, this is not a concussion question or a wrestling question. I'm merely calling on you because you're the wisest man I know. He said, Okay, no pressure there. And I said, there's a saying, I think it's a political saying, and it says, when you lose blank, you lose blank. And then I said, and it's meant to indicate that if you lose something smaller, it's, you know, representative of a larger loss to follow. And like a minute later, Nowinski comes back with, I believe you're looking for, as Ohio goes, so goes the nation. Like, just had it, and he even like gave me a link to the Wikipedia page for the quote. So it's a pretty famous quote, and last week I said, think of me as Iowa, as Ohio, rather, and that if you lose me, you're not just losing this one, die-hard, long-term, disgruntled fan, but you are on the verge of risking, and I didn't want to say hundreds of thousands of other people, but as it turned, I think I did say it, I was hesitant to say it. I didn't want to make myself look try to look that important. But when the ratings came in, it turned out they had lost hundreds of thousands of people. And I'm just, I felt like I had to follow up last night because this is the show where they're going to try to get some of those people back. And someone needs to say this, like, and you and I are kind of in the same boat in that we love the company, but we don't work for them. You know, I think you do a couple things with them. I do a couple things with them. Thank you, Huey. Just turned in his report on the history of Radio City Music Hall. I'm homeschooling the young man.
Oh.
Very good job. But I think what they're going to do, I mean, I'm just worried that they're going to kind of double down on what they have. And that we're going to see a very authority-heavy show. And that's where I think guys like you and me who've been around can say, guys, rethink this. Like, this might not be the answer to your problems. Like, the problems, injuries, Seth Rollins' injury came at a terrible time.
Yeah.
You know, Brock's gone away. They've only got I don't know if they have any aces up their sleeve. And I just want them to rethink things. I just want to know if my voice can be out there and be one of those things that's batted around before they go forward with something that I think could be a losing proposition.
But when you think you're going to double down on the authority, you think they're going to employ the authority even more airtime within the show and a bigger part of the show?
That's one of my concerns. And the reason I call it a concern is somebody asked me a few weeks ago, like, wow, did they ever have, like, a baby face, I'm saying, using authority here as an authority figure,
right,
besides you? And I said, Steve Austin was a great baby face commissioner, and so was Ric Flair. But it's been, you know, that was... I did it in 2000, you did it in like 2002, somewhere there. So it's been 14 years since we've had a balance. You know, I always thought that there was a swing in the pendulum and that the show could be heel heavy and then you kind of try to smooth it out. And I see Hunter and I see the guy who breathed life into NXT. You know, I see Stephanie, and I see this, I've always liked Stephanie, always thought the world of her, and I see this person who does great things for Be a Star, for Connor's Cure, and I think it confuses people. Like, it's hard to really dislike this guy that's kind of built NXT from the ground up. It's hard to really dislike Stephanie, and I hope that's not nitpicky, but I think you know from having worked for some of the, you know, the really good bookers over the years, that with the exception of Rip Rogers, I think every booker pushed themselves because, you know, strong personalities tend to believe in their own abilities. But now you're in a position where the strong personalities are not on the marquee for the house shows or the main events. And that's my worry, that they're going to double down with this, with the authority. And I'm And I'm not sure that's what people want to see.
Yeah, but it's interesting because the authority's not going to draw any money on the house shows. And I thought maybe, because I never really got a clear explanation of why they broke up me and Eric Bischoff when we were the co-GMs, because it was highly entertaining. I really enjoyed
the chemistry
and working with Eric, man. It was a blast. But, you know, unceremoniously, they just split us up. I never really got an explanation, and we went down a road. Well, we were good for TV, but we weren't drawing any money into houses. So from that standpoint, I could see it. So when you look at the authority now, it's not drawing money for you in the houses. Then from a TV perspective, you know, to your point, you know, the authority has been around so long. And, you know, I can dislike Stephanie as a heel because she's so good. She's such a great promo and such a dynamic presence. She has so much charisma, and she can focus in like a laser. And Triple H, you know, to your point, he built NXT. It's just the fact, you know, and I can dislike him too, you know, from a character standpoint, and with all his other accomplishments considered, it's just the fact that it's the same old, and it's always trying to, you know, it's like I had to deal with Vince, and, you know, I guess that had been done before, but we took it to a whole new crazy level, and then it was time to get off that and go down a different road. It's just the fact that this has been going on for so long, you know, the same old, and it's like, why can't the powers that be or the authority turn into this neutral faction in which, you know, that the heels are fined or punished or anybody that breaks the rules? I mean, and it goes back, I guess, not to segue off of that, but just to stick within the authority. As far as the overall tone or product of Monday Night Raw, you know, presented in a serious shoot fashion where you know it's a work. And I was just having this conversation last week on a podcast. When you go see the new Tom Cruise movie in Mission Impossible, you know it's a work. You know Tom's not really doing this, but they're setting it all up so that you can suspend your disbelief and buy in. And so just from the top to the bottom, yeah, I think the storylines just in general have been, you know, so sugar-coated and nothing of real substance. It's hard to suspend disbelief. And it's not really a heat-based show. And there's, even when Seth, before he went down, as great of a worker and performer is inside the ropes and in the ring, he didn't really necessarily have a ton of heat. I haven't seen anybody really have a ton of heat in a long time. Man, I don't think they're booking heat. And I don't know. I think it's a bigger problem than just the authority. And we'll get into promos, but in just a minute. But, you know, I just don't know why they can't play the authority now as a neutral faction rather than be so heavy-handed and forcing their issue, trying to keep the dude with the belt or the guy that just got the belt and keep throwing obstacles at him. It's been done to death.
Yeah. And I thought for a while they were, you know, kind of a neutral faction. And, you know, Stephanie was the one who ushered in the Divas Revolution, which is, you know, which has had its problems, but she was, you know, clearly a babyface on that night. And Triple H at different times come down as a very you know, level-headed figure of authority. I think, and I'll find myself like driving down the road, and the danger of like bringing up good ideas is, I think if people talk about them, there's less chance that they will get done. And I really wonder, because there were a couple of scenarios going into the Survivor Series that seemed to make more sense than the path they chose. But because they made more sense, people were talking about them. And I believe Roman Reigns as part of the authority would take off. I think that's what that character could have really used. I don't, you know, like, and I'm not saying this to pander to you, even though I'm not above pandering to you, because you are Stone Cold Steve Austin, but they're kind of putting him in that Steve Austin role, and not everybody can pull that off. You know, like, I almost wish I could talk to Roman and just say, like, don't crinkle your eyes. Like, just work on a couple of things that have, like, you know, like, that create negative, you know, almost instantaneously negative feedback, and you know, suffer and succotash and things like that that Vince may or may not written for him, which is probably not the right way to go. I think Roman really prospered, a little air of mystery surrounding him. But going back to the idea that Survivor Series could have ended a different way, and that it may have gone the way it did in order to surprise people is kind of, you know, 1 week down the road, there's nothing to be gained by that surprise if it's not best for long-term business.
So do you think his nuances, his mannerisms are too cliched or overacting or, you know, and trying to force this personality that he is not?
It's going to be really interesting moving forward. I know that, you know, there are a couple of them that, and I want to say, and this is, what is it? In the South, you say, bless his heart before you say something bad about him.
Yeah,
in the
yeah,
North, you say,
yeah.
With all due respect.
Yeah.
he's a good guy, and he's a hard worker, and he deserves a top spot. I think, you know, even if it was something like, and I'm not a believer in taking, you know, people to acting classes, but I think if you were to show them some things and say, you know, he told me to call him Joe when I met him. That's what I call him. I believe it's his middle name. So, Joe, these expressions are killers. Like, you are too handsome. You know, like, you look great. Yeah, there's an art to getting sympathy. Like, he's got a couple strikes against him because he is a handsome guy, and he looks like he's carved out of granite. He's got to find another way to connect with people, and to make a couple of the expressions that are instantly off-putting is not the way to go. If the authority wants to throw a ton of heat on him, it's possible, you know, that he can come out on top. Putting him in the Stone Cold Daniel Bryan role, I don't know. I remember I remember my kids coming home, and I talked about this when last time I was on Raw, which was October of 2014, and they'd just seen the Shield for the first time, and they were like in awe, like, Dad, you have to, these guys are amazing. And they were, you know, they were incredible. And there's money in a Shield reunion. I think there's money with, Reigns and Rollins. I think there's money in Rollins coming back. I would not bet against that guy being ready for Mania, as much of a training maniac as he is. So I think there's a lot of positive things on the horizon. When I'm driving on the road, thinking about this stuff, I'm like, what if Shane O'Mac came back? There are a couple of those, like, oh my God, moments that you could throw into the mix and really get people talking. I don't know if they have any of them lined up. And
yeah,
but
Mick, do you feel like these guys are being coached up too much as far as how to react? And it's almost like they're overdoing or overacting in almost every regard to try to, you know, enunciate or with a facial expression, oh, this hurts, or oh, this is a thrill of victory, or, you know, oh, this. It just seems like it's a little over the top. And I think, you know, if you go back to when you started, I mean, and training with Dominic DiNucci, I mean, probably very, humble beginnings, low key, and learning the ropes, and you weren't really coached up or given some pep rally or, you know, speech to fire you up, but you went through the paces, you learned how to sell, and, you know, I think they're coaching them to do all these things, and it just creates kind of a caricature of what you're actually supposed to be doing. It's almost like pretending to be a pro wrestler than being one.
And there's
a fine line there, but there is a difference between the two.
And I think you and I have talked about this before, about the art of the promo and how good things were. And I don't mean to say we never had bullet points or there weren't times when I had specific lines, you know, especially if I heard that Vince wanted me to get a specific line. And by God, I was going to get that line in. But we had this freedom to improvise, and therefore I think, you know, take you and me in the ring with a promo, I was reacting to things you said because I didn't know exactly what you were going to say. You know, it wasn't a rehearsed action with known words and
right.
And therefore almost scripted outcomes. And I just I don't know why. And you know, you this is one of the things that I appreciate you hammering this home on your podcast. It's missing from the product. And I know, you know, Vince was there when we were breaking ground every week. And I threw in the phrase, you know, swinging and missing, because I think it's important, like, that people not be afraid to make mistakes. I think that's one of the great learning tools. So when I did, I'm very fortunate to do a special for the network based on, you know, the one-man show I brought around. And the knock I think I had on the company, I'm not sure if this part aired or not, if I actually said it on the night it was taped, I said that, and I come to think of it, I think I specifically left out the knock on the company knowing they were filming it. But I said, like, when you script things, like, you do take away, like, the chances of disasters. And then I'll joke and say, like, we're not likely to see another Mark Henry date go terribly wrong, you know, like, yeah, in our lifetime. But at the same time, you know, when you try to eliminate disasters and you try to eliminate the chances that guys like me and The Rock will go 14 minutes overtime on a, you know, turn a 12-minute segment into 26, you also, like, take away that likelihood or that chance, that possibility that something really special will take place out there. And you know, I think if you looked at, you know, your top 10 promos or my top 10 promos or guys of the, you know, of that era who did some good stuff, in probably half those cases, they were things that kind of took on a life of their own. All with Austin 316, King of the Ring 97 being probably the best example of that. I've been having a lot of fun talking about Dusty Rhodes on the road and how much his promos meant to my, believe it or not, my 12-year-old son just became fascinated with Dusty's promos, the Hard Times promo.
Yeah.
And what else? And I have this larger point where I'll actually do a little bit of the promo. People who've never heard it are like caught up. You know, I do about a minute and a half of the promo. And then I said, you know, if an 18-year-old Virgil Riley Runnels had handed that into an English class, they would have given him a C-. And there would be notes in red paper saying, in red writing saying, Mr. Runnels, you know, technically there were more than two bad people in the history of the world, you know.
Yeah.
And if, you know, if we were to construct such a list, it's highly doubtful that American actor John Wayne would actually be on it. But at the same time, you couldn't have Vince tell any of those, the guys, and the writers worked their butts off, you know, and to thankless job, but you couldn't tell one of those guys, you know, I want a Hard Times promo.
Right.
Go in that room and deliver. You couldn't do it. I still believe in, like, the heart and soul of the promo and the way that guys like Dusty were able to breathe life into these, into the words.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
Paying out of your own pocket for gear you need to do your job is a problem. All kinds of departments across the nation, police, fire, EMS, medical workers on the front lines, and even military units, they all deal with constrained budgets and outdated gear. But there's still a job to do, and you need the gear to do it. Hunting for military first responder discounts has historically required going from one website to another and all kinds of hassle. Don't you wish there was one place you could visit that had a carefully crafted selection of deals for military first responders in one spot? GovX works directly with brands to negotiate the best prices possible because you deserve the gear you need at the prices you've earned. Plus, you can trust that the gear you're ordering is 100% authentic, direct from the manufacturer. If you must pay out of your own pocket, you shouldn't have to pay a premium to get the gear you need to effectively perform your duties and complete your mission. GovX has a huge collection of gear and apparel from popular brands, all in one convenient location. It's like a grown man's toy store in here. Just wait until you see our knife collection. All you need to do is sign up for free. No subscription fees. No re-upping your membership every year. Once you're approved, you're a fully fledged GovX member for life. GovX honors your service and gives back to your communities. We don't just thank you for your service, we honor it. So if you're an American of service, a current or former member of the military, firefighting, frontline medical, or law enforcement communities, or the emergency medical, join GovX for free and enjoy a community that honors and gives back to patriots like you. If you've got a military or first responder background, visit GovX.com and sign up for free for instant access to tons of deals and a community that honors your service. Visit GovX.com and receive $15 off first orders over $50 or more when you use code STEVE. That's $15 off first orders over $50 or more when you use code STEVE at GovX.com. But, you know, half the thing about a promo, Nick, is just say, for instance, you and I work in a program, and like you said, I'm saying something, and you don't know the nuts. You might know, have a general idea of what I'm going to say, but you're forced to listen. And so, dude, listening is a whole different thing than just standing there and waiting to say your response because you already know your response. Man, when you're hanging on every word, you know you've got to answer the question or answer what I've said. And so, you know, like it may behoove them to go out there and do some stuff with Roman. Hey, man, I hosted the 2K panel last year sometime, and Roman Reigns was sitting right beside me, and I was going right back and forth with him just off the cuff. And the kid is quick-witted, he's smart, he's funny. And he's got a lot of charisma when you just let him be himself. So if you can set the table for him, give him something to respond off of, I mean, you know, just throw some softballs to him, but let the kid do and say, you know, what he feels and what he wants. I mean, you could gloss over a couple of tips to give him, but just let him be himself. And I think he's trying so hard to be what they want him to be that he's having a hard time being himself. And as you know, man, I mean, in all the very unique characters you were able to create, you know, each one of those people that you were was a big part of Mick Foley, just turned up and in a different direction than the other characters you created. But you were basically being you. And so I think this kid, if he's allowed to just be himself, let him go. Let him follow. He's already fallen on his face trying to remember promos. So let him fall on his face, pay his dues. And, you know, once you get in that water and you sink a few times and someone's got to pull you out, you know, it's sink or swim. Eventually he's going to start swimming and he's going to be just fine. He has all the makings of a superstar. And they call them all superstars from the get-go anyway. But there's a big difference between being called a superstar because that's what the name of the town is and actually being one and drawing money. The kid's got all the potential in the world. They just need to let him go. And if he falters, he fails organically. He just picks up, he dusts himself off, and he keeps going. Do you understand what I'm saying that, though?
By being forced
to listen, it's like our conversation. You've got to listen to what I'm saying because then you're going to respond. Let the kid do that.
Yeah. There were some pivotal moments for me and you, and this is something I talked about a little bit in the first book, you know, but it's not something that's, you know, common wrestling lore. Was the was a camaraderie and also a little bit of a competition in 97 when it was clear that we were going to be able to kind of take off. You know, we were going to be given the chance to take off. That's why I pointed out that to me, in my mind, the Attitude Era began. And I don't even remember. I don't know if you remember the meeting. Vince called us together, and he admitted that things that worked in the past were not working. We were losing the Monday Night War. They had WCW had a really strong hand, and your character was just starting to take off. And Vince said, "We're going to need input. If the character's going to work, we're going to need your input. We're going to have to do things differently than we had." And you and I were like right there, like the number two and three heel role, you know, and you're. Your character was really taking off, and at that time, and this is, you know, he's a, bless his heart, with all due respect, this guy's turned out to be, yeah, seriously, one of the best ex-wrestlers, you know, as far as being a positive person and spreading a positive, Mark Barrow's a heck of a guy, but the fact that he had come in with that big contract, you know, like literally days after I came in for just the guarantee and months after you came in.
Yes.
Kind of fueled us, you know, and we'd be talking or riding, and we knew that we were going to be given this chance. And so they would put the two of us, do you remember a couple of matches we had as heels? They would put us in the ring, and it was like a kind of a magic period because the handcuffs were off. You know, there were no restraints. We were given a chance. I remember at one time, man, the match just seemed to be going forever. And afterwards they said, I'm sorry, but WCW went into a break. You guys were hot. We wanted to keep the action going. And they had that kind of faith in us that we could pull it off. The other one I remember is you and I in a heel match in Montreal when Vader was going to be part of the Vader was going to come out. Do you remember this? He was going to be part of the finish. And then you and I kind of changed it around. And for whatever was the better fit, it was probably you going over instead of a DQ and Vader hitting the ring. And we just decided not to tell Leon that we had changed the finish. And you and I came in hot, yelling at each other as a rib on Vader. He's got his gear on, and he's ready to run out to the DQ. He has no idea that we've changed things around. The guys would gather around. They think they're going to see a fight between Mankind and Stone Cold. But I just remember that feeling, like, of something taking off and being part of something good. You know, we were the underdogs against WCW. We both knew that we were going to have a chance, to take these characters as far as we could. And for me, I knew that I could go out there and try things and fail and not be reprimanded for it, because there was an understanding that it was more important to try and fail than to stand in the middle of the road. And, I'm quoting Mr. Miyagi here, but I think that, advice is kind of timeless. You know, you stand on one side of the road, you're fine. You stand on the other, you're fine. Go in the middle and you're squashed just like a grape. And, I guess in a sense, that's what I'm talking about, the 8-8 booking that WWE has favored for a while. That's seeming to hurt them with the loss of the big stars that we're trying to, we got a bunch of 8-8 guys that we're trying to, that we're supposed to take an interest in.
Referencing the 50-50 booking.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
The wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on everything imaginable this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on win, division, and championship futures today. Head to BetOnline online today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
The Steve Austin Show.
The Steve Austin Show.
With watching the show, Mick, and as you know, WWE strives to put on the absolute best show they can every single Monday night, whenever SmackDown is. At every show, they try to give you your money's worth, to give you a reason to come back. But in saying that, with that being said, and it almost feels like it's so slick, the spontaneity has been lost. And when that spark, that spontaneity of it's live television, anything could happen. Recently, I've done a few podcasts on the network, and they were live. And then I just taped a few here at the ranch with Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels, and I got a lot of tweets on my Twitter account. Oh, man, it's not going to have the same energy because, it's live. Well, okay, back to the point of that. First of all, the podcast turned out just fine. You'll see them on a network. A cheap plug. But, Mick, that goes with live television, man, and that's the thing. I'm a big football fan, so last night, Sunday Night Football, anything could happen. On Monday Night Raw, back in the day, man, when it was the Monday Night Wars, you've got trained professionals out there moving at the, speed of light damn near inside the ring. Guys, 200, 250 pounds, you know, telling these badass stories. And you felt, man, if somebody screws up, I mean, it's going to be interesting. Or guys will cover. But you just felt like you're watching a true sporting event. And we know the business is a work, but you want to feel like it's a sporting event.
Yeah, and this is where I think you and I are both in agreement. There are some phenomenal athletes out there. And that's why in my post I said, man, I think the talent pool is deeper than it's ever been. Because of the booking, there are only a few guys who've been groomed to be, you know, successors to the crown. And with a couple injuries, that's hurting them right now. But going back to what you said, there was an excitement. You know, I'll joke around and say that in 2000, you know, this is right after my active days had ended for the first time. Come back a little too often. But there was this sense of, you know, there was unparalleled, like, adrenaline rush and sense that things could go terribly wrong, you know, and there'd be 12 guys that were going to take place in a segment, and we didn't know exactly what was going to be said, and I was the commissioner, so I kind of had to know what was going on to play the moderator, and fireworks are going off, and pyro. And my mom asked me, like, well, Mick, how many days in advance do you find out what you're going to say? And I said, like, days? You know, like, she said, hours? I said, Mom, I said, there are times that pyro's going off, and we'd all be huddled back there, you know, like, okay, what's, you know, just trying to figure out, trying to piece it together. And sometimes there was really magic, you know, that came out of the chaos.
Well, sometimes you tell a guy, hey, man, just go do your thing. I got your back, or I'll follow your lead. Or, you know, hell, if you get lost, I'll jump in. And so it was a survival mechanism. And it forces you to be at your best. And the guys and gals are currently operating at their best. And for the most part, there's a lot of them doing a really good job. But some of it feels so slick that you don't have that edge that you used to have.
No, and I think... you know, there is the real premium on the work rate, and things have changed to where, like, almost, you know, you can't be a top guy without a real list of cool moves. And sometimes I think that takes away from the actual, you know, feeling of watching something that could be real. Like, you know, like, the heat isn't heat without six or seven cool moves thrown in. I think the mics are so hot that, you know, you almost have to, you know, work out matches ahead of time. I don't think there's as much ability to call things on the fly because the mics are right in there. I love the cast of characters. And I'm going to, you know, I'll be honest here, and I hope I don't put heat on the two young women, but, man, the thing that really bothered me last week was when Sasha and Becky Lynch had their, I believe it was their first singles, and I thought, okay, they're putting them out there here without a program. This is going to be like a defining moment in women's wrestling. They're going to give them the same type of chance that they had at NXT TakeOver. And everything they did was good. The two of them, they don't do anything that doesn't have meaning. They're two of the best women I've ever seen. And 4 minutes later, it was over. It was like it had never existed at all. And that's when I got angry, because I know how hard the two women work. And I know how much pride they take in what they do. And I know that, imagine... if you and I, instead of having that, you know, that heel match where we got the three extra minutes, we were allowed to put in 12 or 13 and really go at it with almost nothing called, you know, still one of my, I put it on one of the DVDs just because I thought it was like a, you know, a kind of a lost classic. But imagine, you know, 97, when we're going head to head with WCW, if they told us we had four, including introductions. I think you more so, you would have spoken your mind. I would have tried to explain that I thought the two of us could do a better job given more time. You would have told them in a more direct manner.
Well, to your point, I mean, yeah, those are two badass women. I've really been excited about some of the NXT gals that have come up, and well, not so much that they've come up, because I don't think the system allows them to be as free and as creative as they were allowed in NXT. I just thought they were a little bit more at home there, maybe a little bit nervous about, you know, the aspect of live TV, but I think they're so good, they've gotten past that. It's just they're being micromanaged. But to your point about, you know, being given not enough time, it takes me back to many, many years ago. You know, I had a Raw match, you know, live television with Chris Benoit, who could, you know, work his ass off.
Yeah,
I love
yeah.
working with the guy. And we only had, oh, I think 10 minutes, maybe 12 at the most. But anyway, I was disappointed with the match because I had so much respect for Chris as a hand in the ring. And so the next night we were working SmackDown. I think it was Chris's hometown in Edmonton. And then I think, again, they'd given us maybe 3 more minutes. We're at 15. And I just simply told Chris, I said, dude, I said, we're going to go until I say go home. I said, I said I'll take the heat. And you know, Chris just looked at me with that snaggletooth and just shook his head and said, okay, because he knew I had his back, because I could go out on a limb there and push the time limit. And, of course, it was an instant classic of a match, because not because I'm the greatest worker in the world, because he was who he was. It was his hometown, 10 German suplexes. You know, I said, I don't see you getting a comeback in this match. Here's your comeback. And he goes, may start shaking his head. And so, but anyway, to your point, it was like, yeah, you got two badass chicks like Sasha and Becky Lynch. All of a sudden, 4 minutes with entrances, you kind of hamstring them after everything. They've come so far. The cream has risen to the top, and these gals are actually doing pro wrestling matches, in my opinion. And then all of a sudden, you hamstring them with 4 minutes. So that's disheartening.
Yeah.
Why even do the match? 4 minutes?
I know.
You're trying to build, and then all of a sudden you throw a roadblock at them, 4 minutes, and then to their credit, they didn't try to go out there and put 8 minutes worth of stuff in a 4 minute match, to their credit.
Yeah, and they had a very, everything was
about as good a 4 minute match as you can have.
Yeah.
And talking about these women, Meg, here's one thing I've noticed about, in particular, you know, Charlotte, Sasha, Bailey, Becky, I may be missing one of them there, but man, these young ladies are working more like the boys did back in the day than the guys are now, because they're working off pretty much kind of like a shine the baby up, a little bit of heat, hope spots, go home, is what it is. Work a body part. The heel gets real heat. She's devious. She's mean. And a lot of times when I'm watching the guys, it's segmented work, Mick. You know,
yeah.
it's you get a couple spots. It's 50-50 work. And so then all of a sudden it comes time for the heat. There's no real heat, so there's no real need for a comeback. But then it's the gratuitous 3 clotheslines. You know, almost slapped the Matt Bryan Pillman style. But there's no anticipation of the comeback, because nothing meant nothing to begin with. So there never was a story that was told.
And I think, you know, when you talk about heat, like Sasha does such a great job. I'll find myself, you know, when people say, who reminds you, you know, the comparisons are usually like, you know, Ambrose, you know, Bray Wyatt. And I'll go, you know what? I watch Sasha Banks and I say, like, why didn't I think of that? Because I was, you know, playing with a pretty limited physical hand. And I'll see things like where she's just stomping, you know, like on the fingers, like the creative stuff. And she's really like an artist out there, an artist, but in the sense that she captures you in the wrestling match she's in. And, you know, the guys like you make it look, how did she do that? I love it. And I just... You know, I'm going to make a plea to Mr. McMahon here. Like, let her do her thing. You know, like, she's kind of symbolic to me, like, of things that are good about wrestling. You know, I mean, the four divas you mentioned, or four women's wrestlers are, as a whole. But I've associated with Sasha since, when I say associated, like, with the character.
Yes.
Ever since I saw a picture of her as a teenage girl visiting me, I had no idea that she was in the room when I did my pre-tape with Snoop Dogg in 2008, and she was too shy to say hello. She's like this kid living a dream, she's got this character that works.
Yeah, the boss.
And I think she's being messed with. And it's like, if you have someone who's there, who's firing all cylinders, don't. And I'm saying to Vince, this is probably going to get her more heat. Just like, don't leave her alone. Let her do her thing.
Yeah.
Don't tell her, because you're 70, Vince. She's 23. You don't speak for everybody out there. Just because you don't get it doesn't mean it's not there to be gotten. When you have people chanting, "We want Sasha," it's not without reason. Like, please, Mr. McMahon, please leave. Like, just leave her alone. Let her do her thing. If they want her, give her to them. Let her do the thing. Like, we're looking for faces of future faces of the company. And here's one of them. And it's like, Steve, part of the reason I threatened, to stop watching is that makes me sad. Like, it makes me sad to see someone work so hard who's there and is being led in different directions. Remember when you and I, and I hope that Sasha will forgive me for comparing her to Leon White in any way. But do you remember poor Leon? You were watching him work with Shawn Michaels, and they were, of course, they're having a good match. And you said, "Well, kid, Leon's really got that style down." You know the punchline, right? You go, "Leon's really got that style down. Now he's just got to lose 200 pounds to fit it." Because, this is pre-Attitude Era. I still maintain if Vader had come in during the Attitude Era, he'd be in the Hall of Fame by now. But they had him running laps away, like literally running away from opponents. Everyone is in his ear. He felt like he had to take a bump on everything. And it was just like he wasn't the guy that we all knew he could be. And
Go ahead.
I'm just afraid that when you take these people who literally held that, they didn't literally, figuratively held, 14,000 people in the palm of their hands in Brooklyn, and they deserve, at least in my opinion, deserve the opportunity to get that same chance, in WWE, to tamper with that and to mess with somebody's confidence is... it's sad, and it's one of the reasons I'm really on the border of becoming a former fan.
Okay, but let's go back to Leon. Why do you think when he came in here and Leon again?
You know what's sad? The fact that we talk about Leon and we laugh is indicative of how badly they, because we weren't laughing in WCW.
Oh, no, no, we no. But we both have a ton of respect for Leon.
Yeah, well, of course.
As a worker in the ring, man, that dude was badass. I mean, he's one of the best big men in the history of the business and should be in the Hall of Fame. But we also know Leon because we know Leon's actually a big teddy bear. He's one of the sweetest guys in the world. And he can knock your head off with those working punches when he's clubbing you. And you've been on the receiving end of those just like I have.
Yeah, and I've been on the receiving end of yours.
I knew you were going to say that.
Somebody tried to stir up something with me and you social media, saying Mick Foley's claiming that Steve Austin's working punches were no day at the beach. And I'm like picturing you reading that and nodding your head and being like, damn right they weren't, Like, if somebody would say, like, why didn't you say anything? I'd be like, he was Steve Austin. And I'm not, and Steve, I mean, it's been years. I don't, I'm not above it, but I swear I'm not pandering to you. When people will ask me, what was the favorite character, favorite time in wrestling, there's different answers in different days.
Oh, yeah.
But there were times when you were Stone Cold, I was Mankind, where everything we did just, it was so much bigger. The responses were so much bigger than anything I'd ever, visualized wrestling could be. And it was just, man, it was really, it was really a pleasure to be out there. But with that being said, yeah, when you got that comeback, it was no day at the beach.
before I continue my story and my point about Leon,
okay,
and we love to call him Leon. Before we get back to Vader, I question: were my working punches that stiff? Force you?
Okay.
I want 100% honesty.
All right, not as stiff as Vader's. Because yours tended to pick up velocity during the comeback. You believed, which was part of what made me, and the more you believed, the more they hurt. Everything Leon did hurt, yeah. You know, and yours were tended to pick up momentum during the comeback. They were harder than Brett's rubber mallets. Shawn Michaels, you know, he was a hard hitter. I think he had to because of his
size. Well, the thing about Shawn was he had that pinpoint accuracy, so his kind of stung just because, like, you weren't thinking that this dude that weighed about 215-20 was going to be snapping those things. And, you know, you sold them, but, yeah, they peppered you a little bit.
Listen, I think I've mentioned this to you, and I love your show because, you know, you treat the business with such respect, but you talk pretty openly, you know, and I was watching, I can't remember if I was watching, I had to have been watching Rock, because I think, or you, right, yeah, it was, you were still active. You were active for about a year after a couple of years after I retired the first time. And I just kind of leaned over to Triple H and I went, Hunter, you've worked with both Austin and Rock, right? Because, yeah, what's the major difference? Without thinking about it, he goes, Rock's punches didn't hurt at all, and Steve's hurt like hell. And I went, bingo.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
Did you know that right now GEICO is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of the money GEICO could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your dog to make you breakfast in bed? With Belgian waffles and a fresh fruit compote? As nice as that sounds, that's probably never going to happen. But at least there's never been a better time to switch to GEICO. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit GEICO.com to learn more.
Why did Leon come in here walking on eggshells?
And was it because the first few matches he had with Shawn, he was lighting his ass up, and then Shawn went to the old man, and of course, you know, Shawn was the guy, and so you can't pepper the guy, and man, it was just, right after that, it just seemed like Leon just never recovered from that.
You know, I think it goes before that, because I think he did SummerSlam 96 with Shawn, and Leon had started 4 or 5 months before that. I know he was in Mania, because I got into the I rode with Leon. I started the day after Mania. That's when I debuted against Bob Holly, and then ran in when Taker was facing Justin Hawk Bradshaw. And Leon handed me his bill that he had gotten from from WrestleMania, and as you and I know, the company takes care of you during WrestleMania. You only get charged for the incidentals.
Yes.
And because I was Mankind, I wasn't actually going to be seen until the day after Mania. So I was not part of any of the festivities. I just sat there, you know, in that Hilton overlooking the parking lot of Disneyland. And eventually I did head over there. I just thought there's worse things a guy could be doing going to Disneyland on his day off, and I had rung up like all of like $47 over 5 days, and you know that's where I was in my life at that point. It's probably kind of expensive by my taste. And Leon hands me these receipts, and at the time, I mean, there've been bigger receipts in this year, but it was like $650, $200 sunglasses, and you know the mini bar and room service, and I just thought, this isn't going to work, you know. And Leon was dropping me off at like the $30 specials and then going to the hotels in it, and it wasn't going to work. But at that time we were riding, and his frustration was with the fact that they wanted him at that time, a heel had to be a coward. So that even when he premiered, even when he did the Vader splash on Gorilla Monsoon, which was really special because nobody had gotten to Gorilla in at least 10 years, probably a lot longer, they still had him running away from, I think, Scott Hall and one of the other guys. And as we know in WCW, like, Leon didn't back down. Like, he was the biggest, baddest.
Right.
You know, he was the baddest apple on the tree because he was so good. Like, you know, he could make baby faces by giving them great matches and feeding comebacks. And even something as, I mean, this is, you know, going back to when I hurt my ear and was working with Leon in 94. Mm-hmm. I mean, Leon didn't know that my ear was, you know, was gone. But when he saw that I was, you know, bleeding heavily, and it didn't go until he called the comeback, you know, like he called the comeback because he was a guy, he liked to make opponents. You know, like he ate people up on a certain level, you know, and he made quick work of, you know, he was really believable in his matches with the underneath talent. I joked around, but I was joking around about a true events. And I don't know if you ever saw it, but I know that I did, where I would see Leon's name, Vader, and then I would see the talent he was working with, and I would see the guy look at his friends and just shake his head and say, I don't think this is for me. And, like, it wasn't, like, unheard of. It wasn't like you know, people didn't call him names. It was almost like, I understand. And they would just walk down Peachtree Street, never to be seen from again, because Leon would eat those guys up, and then he would give back to your baby faces. And he made guys, like, you know, he and I had a heck of a rivalry because because we would go toe-to-toe, and I did take a beating, and, you know, I would come back, but he was calling those comebacks, and he was great in making people. And I think when he got to WWE, pre-Attitude Era, he just had so many people in his ear, so many people trying to tell him how to be a heel. He wanted to get along because I think there was he had the reputation of being cranky with management, and he was just baffled. He'd be driving along and he'd be going, I'm Vader, like I'm Vader. And I'm running around the ring away from my opponent. And, One day he had a match with Taker and he was really happy with it. And he was telling me what he did in his match. And I was like, yeah, that's a heck of a match, Leon. That was a heck of a match when I had it with him last night. You know, like he was taking what had worked for me. And he just, I should say, Leon White's, like, he's down to about 350. He's in phenomenal shape. He shouldn't have to wrestle at his age, but he is. And he's a guy that I don't think gets his due, as being one of the great heels of his generation.
No, the dude was great. I guess I was leading into, he was walking on eggshells. And again, it was the confidence thing. They wanted to be a backpedaling type heel, which at his size and weight and his mean streak that he had, that wasn't who he was. But in trying to function in the system, it didn't work out so well. But do you feel like today's roster is walking on eggshells?
I see your...
Dude, there's nowhere to go.
I see your larger point, for sure. I think so. You've got to get in your mandatory, you know, cool moves. You got to get the oohs and ahs. And I think it's hard to go out there. It's really hard to go out there and assert yourself with other people's ideas. You know, when we were driving down the road, and this is, I hate to be the guy going, in my day, but what I've maintained about the scripted promos is that they don't hurt you the day you give them. You know, if you show up and somebody's got a promo and you learn it and you give it, it doesn't hurt you that day. But what it does is eventually it relieves you of the necessity to constantly be thinking about your character. You know, like, and a lot of us, you know, once we got to a certain point, you know, you and I, we were on the road a lot in WCW. And then you kind of have this tendency, I think, at a certain point, to kind of become, I don't want to say lone wolf in a romantic way, but like you spend a lot of time by yourself because that's where I felt like I did my best thinking. You know, like you're off and you're really dedicated to that, to the character. And if you wasn't in a car, then you'd have to find a hotel or just find your own way of getting into that space where you were thinking about those promos, you know, almost 24/7. And I joke around about my wife, you know, like literally like shaking me, you know, like when I was in public and going, yeah, you're cutting promos, aren't you? Because, you know, my fingers would be twitching and my eye would be blinking. But I was always in that place so that, like, you know, if you and I got in the ring and we had a promo together, then it was, I compare it to this, I know I'm kind of jumping around, but after I had just failed as miserably as anyone can fail at anything on stage at a comedy club, about 6 years ago, if Judah Friedlander, Judah's a huge wrestling fan, he was on 30 Rock, great stand-up comic, if Judah hadn't been there, like I wouldn't have ever gotten out of that stage again. That's how painful it was. And he was like, "Dude, it's not as bad as you think." And I went, "Judah, oh my God, it was awful." He goes, "Dude, don't get me wrong. Like, you got to find a way to make people laugh." He said, "But ordinarily, if a guy goes 4 minutes without a single laugh, they're dead." He goes, "But people are actually listening to you." And then he took out like these index cards that he carries with him. It almost reminded me, even though he was using index cards, it was almost like he had a Pentium processor in his head because he had memorized, like, he had just committed so many things in his mind, actions. This is, you know, that he didn't have to think about it. You know, right. The cards were just kind of a crutch. And he'd been through so many things and reacted so many ways that he literally had an answer for everything. And I think in a sense that's the advantage that guys like you and I had, an advantage, you know, like Rock was such a natural. He was able to get where we got, you know, years before we did. But there was give and take, and there was some, you know, Bruce Pritchard tells a story about The Rock coming back after DX had kind of shredded him, you know, on Raw. And he goes, you know, Bruce, I'm doing what I'm told. And Bruce said, "Rock, are you willing to get chewed out?" And he said, "Yeah." He goes, "You're on live TV." You know, like, yep. You're live. Do what you want. Ask for forgiveness later. And I think Vince appreciated that type of thing. But you and I, you know, we were, I think that's what's missing, the repetition. You know, the muscle, you know, it becomes part of the muscle memory that you know you're going to get into situations with people, and they're not always going to be pleasant. Hopefully you're in there with a guy who wants to do business with you, you know, who wants to create a promo that's going to help you both. That was always the ultimate goal. But I think the game has changed so much, and people are so concerned about remembering that you almost sense what I call, you know, memorization and recitation instead of emotion.
Okay, with that being said, you know, like what you said, you were going to conclude your write-up with the immortal words of Owen Hart, "Enough's enough, it's time for a change." Where do you start this change?
I don't know. At the very least, I'm just going to put this out there again, because, yeah, thank you for giving me a place to talk about these things. I know Triple H and Stephanie and Vince have really busy jobs, and the fact that I've offered two or three times over the last, you know, year to come in and talk to them for free, like I don't work for them. You know, like, they make action figures, and, you know, I think they paid me a little bit of money when I came in and did SummerSlam. But I'm not like, if they get angry at me, they don't like the ideas, at least they've heard them. Like, I literally live 90 minutes away, less if it's traffic, if there's no traffic. Even when they did, you know, even when car services were offered to me, I like to drive, and I would be happy to take that trip. I think they need to hear some of these viewpoints. I'm not saying that the place to start is talking to me, but I think they could do worse than to sit down with guys who've been there and who've been successful and talk to them about the product. Not in a confrontational way, but just in a, you know, in a way that's conducive to talking.
I mean, and then I think they gotta devil's advocate at least.
Yeah, you know, yeah, exactly. And just if I could, you know, impress upon them the difficulty of wrestling in handcuffs. You know, not literally, because I did do that.
I know what you mean, though.
But when you're going out there and going back to what I said in my article about performing not to, you know, there's a difference between, and I've talked to athletes across the, you know, the sports spectrum about this, when they say they're playing not to make mistakes as opposed to playing to win. And I know, you know, I'm nowhere near as big into visualization as a guy like DDP, but I remember there was this guy who would come to a town basketball camp. His name was Stan Kellner, and he had developed what he called basketball cybernetics. And I was able to take some of what I learned at his camp. It was amazing. He'd have a guy who had never touched a basketball, the rim, and he would say, I want to jump higher. And I'll be darned if he didn't follow Stan Kellner's steps and jump 4 inches higher than he ever had before. Like, it was just a way of getting belief in himself. And the four, maybe five steps were see the picture, think the picture, be the picture. And then the biggest one was don't be afraid to make mistakes. And I think once guys are terrified of making mistakes, like even, you know, even messing up a word, you know, because and Paul Heyman would be the exception to this rule.
Yeah.
Because Paul is magnificent, and you rarely catch him in any kind of grammatical error. But in my case, you know, the promos that I'm associated with, like Kane Dewey, are, you know, they're you know, grammatically, you know, they're not perfect from an English standpoint. You know, a lot of stopping and starting and random ideas thrown in. But like the, you know, the emotion that went into him is still valid, you know, 20 years later. And so I think that's the big thing I would say is like, let the horses run, let these guys do what they can do. Don't be so concerned with making the show perfect that the show stops being good.
When you allow people to make mistakes and have a few failures but pick themselves up, man, to me, that makes them a better entertainer or a better wrestler down the road. Let's wrap this thing up, Mick. I want to talk to you about your website, realmickfoley.com, because you are on the road here in a couple of days. And as we're speaking right now, it's Monday afternoon, but Tuesday you have something called Sock Tuesday. Explain to everybody what Sock Tuesday is so we can help a brother out here.
Sock Tuesday, that's my one day a year socktacular where we essentially sign socks and people can order them from around the world for $19.95 plus shipping. I think, you know, it's kind of a cool thing. You know, you could argue $19.99 is a lot of money for a sock, but almost everyone was happy with their purchase last year. This year it comes with a certificate of authenticity. Last year we were able to do some pretty positive things with some of the money, and I don't know exactly what I'll do with some of it, but I do know I've been looking. Like, there's a couple of wrestlers with injuries, and I'm going to kind of be Santa, and I'm going to try to, if the Sock Tuesday's successful, I'm going to try to take care of some of those medical bills for a couple of the people. And it's just a fun way for me to, you know, give people something unique. And because I've chosen to spend most of December doing you know, my work as an ambassador for Santa, in case you have 6-year-olds listening to the Stone Cold podcast. You know, it gives me a chance to make a few bucks, still do some good during the holiday season. I do a lot. Most of the stuff I do is for kids living in homeless shelters on Long Island. So I kind of found my role as Santa. I really enjoy it, and it gives me a chance to make some money, give some money back, and it gives people around the, you know, around literally around the world a chance to have a pretty cool signed, handcrafted souvenir.
So that's really cool now. And looking at your website here, are these your one-man shows? You've got December 4 in Felton, Delaware, at the Delaware Auto Exchange.
Well, that's just I'm done with the one-man shows for the year. Those are a couple of
appearances.
Those are just appearances. And I'll be tailing off by the end of March. I'll be taking a real long break from doing the one-man shows.
Well, let's talk about just that. Kinda, are you going to try Cool Jets a little bit because you've been on the road so much?
Yeah, you know what's happened to me, Steve, is the road is, man, it is really, it's kicking my butt in a way that it never did. You know, I was, when I was on your show a year and a half ago or so, that we were talking about the schedule I was keeping. And, you know, and I think at the time I was just coming off 13 cities in 13 days where I drove 85 hours, and I was like still kind of raring to go, and it's just in the last year and a half that, man, I'm slowing down a lot. You know, you've seen the way I walk. It's kind of hard for me to get around, and I just I want to take it easy. I want to be home more. Honestly, I've kind of run out of cool stories too. I got to kind of got to kind of think of some things, you know, go back and jog the memory and find some things and go out there with a show I can really be proud of.
But when you showed up at my house that one night when we did the show there in my office, and man, Kristen made you a big-ass cup of coffee, maybe made you a sandwich or something, because you had promised a fan something, and it went above and beyond the call of duty, and you helped this person out and made this, you know, just personal appearance just for, you know, you're doing someone a favor. It turned into a nightmare. By the time you got to my place, I was like shaking my head. I'm thinking, man, how am I going to get a podcast out of this guy? You know, he doesn't do amphetamines. He's never done anything in his life. I was thankful that you drank some coffee. But so finally, you know, the road's, you know, starting to be a little too much.
Yeah. It is wearing me down. So I'm slowing down a great deal. I'm looking at, you know, just, you know, 6 or 7 days a month on the road, homeschooling two of my kids. Some of the guys out there know they don't want, you know, my 14-year-old son is on the autism spectrum. And I'm just trying to spend a lot more time, you know, with him. Time is, you know, things, kids grow up so fast. So I'm trying to take care of these, trying to be there for those pivotal years while still being part of the, you know, part of the business. I, before we go, I wanted to mention, I had forgotten until Drew Galloway brought it up that I'd actually brought up his name the last time I was on your podcast.
Yes.
Just as a guy who had really caught my attention. And I think this is a message for WWE, is that if you have a guy and he grows that much as soon as he's gone, it should be obvious that the creative atmosphere is a little bit stifling. If we have a guy like that who's 6'7", who looks like he's carved out of granite, and he's become a comedy act, and a good one. I've got my 3MB farewell tour shirt, and I love 3MB, but when I first saw him, you know, he sent me a thing, and it was 17 minutes long, and you know what it's like if somebody sends you something. You're much more likely to look at it if it's 30 or 40 seconds long,
yeah,
than if it's 17. And it took me like 4 days, and I thought, okay, let me watch this. And I was just looking at my screen going, where the blank did this guy come from? This is not the Drew Galloway that I'm used to seeing. And Steve, I came from Scotland, where I was part of that Insane Championship Wrestling show, where they drew over 4,000 people. They sold out the SECC in Glasgow a month ahead of time. And, man, they just, it's just, you know, I know I'm kind of all over the board here, but people walked away elated. And that's a word I used to Stephanie when I saw her after my family had attended an NXT show. And I said, Stephanie, we realized we were all elated. Like there was something special about what we had seen. And I compare that to the way people were walking after the rumble last year. I dropped my kids off in Philadelphia. There was a bad snowstorm, so I took the wheel, still being the wheel man.
Oh, no.
Took the family to Philadelphia, kind of outran the storm to make sure that I was there, dropped them off, and then picked them up. And so I was like about a few hundred yards from the building, and no one needed to tell me how the show had gone. I could tell by the way people were walking that they weren't happy. And there was a shuffle. It was like a sad shuffle.
Right.
And then when the kids got in the thing, it was like, all right, just wait till I get on the highway and you can tell me how it went. But I compare and contrast the way that people looked coming out of that show to the way that people looked leaving NXT TakeOver last May, where I saw, you know, I literally drove 12 hours to see Sasha and Becky Lynch wrestle. Took, you know, I was in Tennessee with my 12-year-old. I was like, okay, we're 12 hours from home. We're 12 hours from Orlando. Where do you want to go? And we decided to go see that match. And I was, you know, I was so glad we did, because I need those moments to kind of remind me of why I love wrestling. And that's what that ICW show did. It really did. So I just, you know, I thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about it. I don't think I sounded like too much of a whiner. I think I did a good job of reinforcing just how hard you hit on your comebacks, which is always a good thing. And in the end, like you and I said, we're two guys who still love the business. We still want to see it prosper. You know, I'm always going to love the company. And in a weird way, I'm always going to love Vince, too. And I wish they'd give me a call every now and then just to come in and talk things over.
And as Tony Reale always has on his show on ESPN, they got to correct the facts. I believe at the NXT TakeOver in Brooklyn, it was Sasha versus Bayley, the match you were talking about.
But the one I went to in May last year was Sasha and
okay.
Becky. Yeah, that was in Orlando. Yeah,
okay, gotcha.
And if I had one thing to do over, as soon as I heard of Bayley and Sasha were in Brooklyn, I would have. I had an appearance the night before. I wish I'd canceled that and really been a part of history. But yeah, so you were correct.
Okay.
In correcting a mistake I had not made.
I'm confused. I failed. I will learn from this failure and move forward. Hey, Mick, I appreciate you coming on the show. And once again, to Mick's point, just two guys shooting a breeze about the business. Mick's not bitter about anything. I'm not bitter about anything. We spent enough time in the business to love it enough, care enough about it to sit here and just hash out a few opinions and just share our thoughts. And so whether you agree, disagree, and there's no malice intended towards anybody, all respect to the talent that's in the ring today. Everybody that's out there, because I know WWE works their ass. I'll put on the best show possible. That being said, it's cool to play devil's advocate and throw a couple of ideas out there. You know, we'll see what happens. But nonetheless, two guys very happy with their post-ring careers, enjoying life. Correct, Mick?
Correct. And thanks for giving me a chance to talk. I appreciate that. And Steve, enjoy Sock Tuesday.
I am. I'm going to enjoy Sock Tuesday. I appreciate it, Mick.
The fumes, the magic marker fumes are heavy in the Foley air. All right, thanks, man. I'll talk to you soon.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Welcome to the MIP.
Yeah!
The Michael Irvin Podcast.
You knew this was coming.
Guess who?
Let me start this thing off.
Join me every week for the Michael Irvin Podcast. We'll give you the full MIP experience. I'm talking everything from football to fashion. I will be chopping it up with playmakers, headline makers, and I am throwing haymakers. I'm the MVP
of the MIP. Don't miss it.
Download new episodes of the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast, every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify.